What's up, everybody? This is Nick Bannock, and you're listening to the Learn Paid Media Podcast. Today's going to be a little bit different because I actually have an interview this time. I don't do very many interviews on here. It's mostly just solo casts. I've had one other interview on someone else's podcast, but this time I have for you an interview with the founder of Voy Media, which is a huge Facebook ad agency that does great work. So we had just a long conversation about Facebook ads, creative strategy, different targeting, marketing in general, and understanding messaging and how to sell online and just lots of different things. We kind of just went back and forth, and it was a really cool conversation. I had a great time talking with Kevin. He will introduce himself at the beginning of the episode. At the end of the episode, you can hear some of the ways that you can find out more about Voy and also about just Kevin in general and how you can connect. So I will just let you know now, if you want to connect with me, just go ahead and find me on Instagram and Twitter at Nick Bannock. You can connect with me on LinkedIn as well. I'd love to continue the conversation there. But I really hope you enjoy this interview, and we'll get into it. Everybody, this is Nick Bannock, and I have Kevin here. Kevin is from Voy Media. So Kevin, can you maybe just talk a little bit about who you are and what you do?
Yep. Hey, Nick. Thanks for having me. So my name is Kevin here from Voy Media. I'm the founder of Voy Media, and we're an agency here out in New York City. And we have a team here about like 25 to 30 people right now, local and also remote as well. And we mainly focus on Facebook ads, but a lot of stuff that we're doing right now with sort of how we're seeing Facebook just changing in general is the creatives. So video productions, content creation, and just making a lot of like content for the platform, these digital platforms.
Cool. So are you doing all creative in-house, or are you working with contractors? Kind of what's your setup look like there?
So for us with the Facebook, when we work with partners, is we have a studio out here in Slovenia. So we have like one of our employees that works for us is actually in Slovenia, and he had like a background in like photography and videography. And just over time, as the agency has grown, he's really been really spearheading that. So when we work with partners, they'll send us products to there, and then we'll take photo shoots there. And then we also have a creative director here that helps with sort of like the ideation and the creative of the content. So our creative director, he used to work at like those big agencies like Drugify, Ogilvy, and now he helps us build a creative team. So the biggest part, at least here for Voy, that we're growing is that sort of creative team, because we are seeing that that's really where clients and partners need help with, as in like, what should they shoot? How should they film? And then we're saying like, hey, we can sort of ideate that for you and also shoot it for you. So that's kind of like how we're thinking about it now. And we sometimes work with like anything, when we have a content, if we need to do like UGC content, then we'll hire like actors to help us with that, or like use like these like Instagram platforms to find those. Or for example, if we need to hire actors, then yeah, we just like look on like Craigslist and hire people to do that type of stuff.
Gotcha. Yeah, you know, it's interesting because we do a lot of Facebook ads as well at Mad Leads. And one of the things that we tend to do is work with in-house teams that are building the creative. And then we're doing all of like the strategy and audience management and like all the bid management and everything else. But definitely been seeing a growing need for better creative and for just like quicker turnarounds. Because even if the companies have a good in-house team, a lot of times they're so bogged down with other things that they're building out that it's becoming more and more of a need to be able to just quickly turn out creative. So it's cool.
Yeah, that's exactly what we're seeing too. It's also like, you probably know too, like it's not that they can't do it. It's just like, it's not a priority for them because they just have other stuff. So we're saying like, hey, we need this content. We need these images. Just send us the products and we'll take some. So, I mean, I'm not sure how you guys do it, Nick. Like even for us, when we think about pricing and sort of like working with brands, it's like, can we do something where it's not like this one-off thing where we can make it like recurring? Like, hey, every month we'll do new photo shoots and video shoots, sort of like bake that in. That way, like us as a team, we can always constantly get new stuff from a partner because we're making it ourselves. And that's kind of like stuff how we think about too, because every time like you're saying, hey, we need a photo shoot, it's like you got to like repitch it again. It's like let's just make it so it's like, hey, every month we'll send you something, right? And it's like an easier transaction now.
Got it. So yeah, I think for us, I do a lot of work with B2B SaaS companies. Yeah. So it's different, you know, the type of creative that we're turning out is different versus like e-com. But on the e-com side, what I found is that a lot of times they're working on bigger design initiatives and whatnot. And so when it comes to like building out creatives for Facebook ads or whatnot, that's tough. And I think the most difficult one though, right now, I think for a lot of clients is being able to put out good videos.
Yep.
So I've been seeing a lot of companies kind of pop up in like the video space that can build out really cool videos for Facebook ads and things like that.
Yeah, I think it's that video component. It's like becoming really massive on Facebook, and everybody wants to be like, you probably know, like whatever, it's like Squatty Potty or like Purple, like all these like really, really good videos until they realize how much it costs. And it's like, yeah, it's like not cheap. It's like super expensive. But there's a lot of these other companies that are coming out that are like kind of like, hey, we can make a Squatty Potty like video for much cheaper, right? So there's this big sort of like essentially like a copycat of like the what is that company that makes Squatty Potty, like Harman Brothers, right? Harman Brothers is the biggest one. A lot of companies are saying, hey, look, we're kind of like Harman Brothers, but like 20%, like almost 20x cheaper, right? So yeah, we're seeing a lot of those companies come out right now too.
Yeah, totally. And it's funny too, because of how different those videos can perform. So like I had a client a while back that was in the mattress space, and we were competing against Purple and whatnot. And it's tough when they're putting out creative, like what they put out. And, then like, it's like, you can't just put together like a video that looks like a banner ad that's like cycling images. It just doesn't really work. It has to be better. And then, what I found is that once you have a better quality video though, the thing that I'm seeing is that you can run that video for a long time. And I think like that's one other topic I want to talk to you about, is that I know it's different with like B2B SaaS versus e-com or B2C lead gen even. I found that sometimes like there's a mistake that a lot of companies make on Facebook where they feel like they always need to be building new ads and launching new ads all the time. Mm-hmm. But like what I'm finding is that sometimes you can have some really nice, like almost evergreen creatives that have a lot of social proof content on them, and they just will outperform anything new that you throw at them. You guys seeing that? Cause I see that a lot with like really good video creatives and whatnot.
Yeah. We see that a lot too. Like even for us, like we literally call it like TOF evergreen, like campaigns, because it's like, these are creatives that you can just keep running forever and ever. And they perform really well. And for us, like as like agency too, we try to make new ones to beat that one. But like sometimes you just can't beat existing ones, which is so crazy sometimes, because we're just trying to figure out, like we'll break down a video into like different segments and parts. But some of these ones that are running for a long time are great. And I think that's sort of like what everybody wants, is that like that one or two videos are going to keep working. But until it doesn't stop working, and then that they're like, oh wow, actually do need another video. So like that's like we run that type of problem all the time. But something that we've seen work really well is, at least when we're trying new videos or creatives, is like we try to split it out from that like evergreen campaign, because all that social proof, all the likes, all the comments are just going to eat up the budget no matter what you throw at it. So we'll try to like make another one that we're sort of saying, okay, let's try to build it up and see if it can actually perform really well, because we're trying to, at least for us, it's like the control, which is that evergreen one. You always want to sort of like be in the mindset of like, how can we beat that control? Because eventually we want to see, can we make it better? So, I mean, that's kind of how we think about it. But yeah, there's a lot of campaigns out there that we see from like, wow, it's crazy how this video is like a year old and it still works really well. And like, and then you'll make a video yourself, and then like, it'll work well for a month, and then it's like, it'll just completely like flop. And it's like, why do some videos just continue to work well while others just like suck, right? Essentially. And it's like, wow, what happens? Yeah. It's like, you never know. Yeah.
It's so true. And when you're running those, just a follow-up question on that. So when you're splitting out like a new creative to test against the evergreen, are you basically doing like, you're targeting the same audience to see if you can, you know, resonate the same way? Are you doing like a test and learn, like split test? How are you kind of structuring that?
Yeah. So usually what we'll do is we'll separate out, it depends. Like we don't really like to do, I'm not sure if you guys are doing CBO a lot now. We used to do a lot of CBO, like campaign budget optimization, but we kind of stopped doing it just because like we would put in like five ads and Facebook will automatically pick like one out of the five to show all the budget.
We've been moving people off of it. We moved everyone on it for a while because we're like, oh, because they were saying it was going to be mandatory. Yeah. And then once they kind of pulled that back, we're like, okay, well, we're not going to use it then.
Yeah, that's exactly what we did too. I feel like everybody that I talked to, it's like we all went on it because it's like you had to. But now we're just like, oh, if it's not going to be mandatory, let's go back to ABO, because you can just have a little bit more control, especially when you're testing creatives on it depends on like what stage you're at on Facebook ads. Like if you have a proven like product or service or offer, you really want to test creatives and messaging. So like I think ABO is better than that. But in the beginning, when you're maybe just even testing if your thing has legs, CBO is fine because you're kind of just looking for basic metrics. Say like, hey, can I get some sort of purchases? But yeah, we're doing a lot of ABO now. And how we think about it here is, well, the campaign that's like the evergreen one, we'll have like a, we'll move it into like its own like TOF evergreen one and then set up different top of the funnel tests that we can go to that same audience, that same targeting to see if that video or new creative resonates well. And that's how we think about it. We usually never do like the Facebook split test feature. We'll just do it ourselves. And that's how we kind of think about it. And then depending on the budget, right? Obviously, depending on what you're selling, it's like, purchases, right? But if we're doing it like a lower budget, we'll look at like the higher level metrics, such as add to carts, initiate checkouts, and compare those metrics to like the evergreen one. Say, okay, like we see that this video also has a similar like add to cart ratio. Essentially, we're seeing something here. Let's keep putting more budget to it in case we're not getting like the ROAS that we need to pull through.
Yep. That makes sense. And then I guess, of course, like if it becomes a new evergreen creative, you can always then basically copy it to your evergreen campaign and save all the likes and comments and all the social proof on it. Right.
Yeah. You always, yeah. And then we'll basically just pull it out and make sure we copy that same ad ID. Because it's just like super, it's just like, you need to do it or else like you're just doing it. And that's another reason why. I mean, are you guys doing a lot of like dynamic ads anymore or not really? Like the,
it depends. Actually have, so sometimes like on like some of our SaaS campaigns, we'll actually run like the dynamic where we throw in a bunch of different images and creatives to see what resonates. And then we'll sort of build evergreen creatives off of that. Cause it's a good way for us to test different things when it's like a new product. Cause like recently we got a couple new clients where they really had almost no ad history before. So we didn't know what was going to resonate with their audience. It was sort of a category that was a little bit newer. Yeah. So sometimes it makes sense to do that, but you definitely do lose out on the social proof piece of it.
Yeah.
I will say though, that the dynamic works pretty well for me when I'm doing it on e-commerce, if I'm not using like UGC stuff.
Yeah, we do a lot of dynamic stuff too. Like, for example, we work with like some fitness people too, and we'll just literally pull like 10 or 20 of their Instagram videos, like original content, just putting like a dynamic ad to test, and it works well. And then like, it's annoying because then like we want to scale like one creative, but like we can't pull it out unless we make a new ad, and then you lose all that social proof. But then we're just like, let's just keep running into the dynamic one. But that's another thing too, that like we're kind of going off it a little bit here, just because I don't know, we just feel like we can't control as much as we can. But as you probably know too, like just bulk creating all those ads just sucks. And it's like, yeah, that's why like dynamic is so easy. Cause it's like, oh, let me just select all the images. Right. But
Yeah. So it's almost like for us, I treat it like similar to, it's almost similar to like when I'm doing Google search ads, and I'll have like a dynamic search ad campaign that just like finds kind of new keyword opportunities for me. I almost treat it like that. It's like, all right, well now I know what assets are working or what types of headlines are working. And I've actually found some pretty cool insights from it before. Like there's been a couple of times where we just like one little word in the headline actually made a huge difference. And we wouldn't have really figured that out if we tried to build a bunch of static images or whatever, and then waited for Facebook to serve them. And then one of them gets like one impression a week. So you never know if it
even works. You never know. Yeah. And I think what you said is important too. It's like a lot of it's like the creative, but at the same time too, it's also like the copy, like using like power words, like imagine, we've seen that work really well, like secrets, experts, all these like words that like, I don't know, like they seem kind of like scammy. We see them like kind of work really well on Facebook for like a lot of these products. It's like, what are the secrets to this? And people are like, whoa, what is the secret? And it's like, for some reason they work well. And like, there's like a book, it's called like Words That Sell. I'm not sure you probably heard of it. And that's like a great book to just like look up and reference when you're like trying to do this ad copy, because one word can really make a big difference. Yeah.
No, it's cool that you're bringing that up, because it's funny because, so I have a big background in the Google side of things and the Facebook side, but on the Google side of things, one of the biggest problems I always ran into with agencies and with a lot of marketers is like, there's a lot of people that are just technical marketers, and they think that like, you just have to have the right keywords, like these like very specific ad campaign structures and all this stuff and best bid strategy. And then they start to forget that like the only thing that users actually see is the ad copy. Like they don't, you know, so at the end of the day, the people that are using Google or using Facebook or whatever, they see the ad copy. They see the ad creative, and that's what they are going to engage with. And I think that gets lost a lot of the time just people getting stuck in like the details of like, all right, what's my click-through rate? What's my conversion rate? You know, what's my CPA or what's my ROAS? And it's like, well, look at your actual creative too. And one of the things that comes up there is that when you use words like that on Facebook, to us, like, because we're marketers, like we might see it as like, oh yeah, like that like seems like totally like manipulative, or like people are gonna, you know, whatever. But the reality is it works. Like I know some people that are pretty successful YouTubers and they've even told me before, they're like, yeah, sometimes it's best to just, they're like, it looks stupid when you do it, but like if you do like an all caps word that's like in your headline of your video, like you get way higher engagement. And I know some people that are successful at YouTube just like organically and on the advertising side, and they're like, yeah, like sometimes the cheesier stuff actually really is what works, and it's what people are looking for.
And it's exactly, I think what you said is so on point. Like Facebook, that's why for us, like we tell people, like Facebook is getting easier and easier. Like you put an ad up, Facebook will kind of know who you're to target. Like, you know, with their AI, it's getting pretty smart, and all these tools that are making are better for you. But like, what doesn't change is like the general marketing concepts of how to write copy, how to actually sell a story, how to sell a product. That will never change. And it's just a platform like Google and Facebook, very similar. It's just obviously a different way to deliver an ad, but you're still sort of trying to serve a product or service in front of your users. But kind of what you said before, like Google Ads is the best example of this. It's purely text. You need to be able to sell before that click. And like I tell people like you need to read copywriting books, sales books, read how to do it. Like selling and selling like one-on-one, like, I mean, you probably do too with like your agency. Like you sell to other people all the time. What you're doing is like, we're doing one-on-one sales, but look at with ads and copy, we're doing one to many. So you should be learning what are these like tactics and persuasions that you need to be doing to sort of get people to do that action that you want. Even for us, like, I'm not sure if you guys do this too, for a lot of e-commerce, like for a lot of e-commerce, some of the best companies that we work with actually have like sales pages, like actual like 3,000 word sales pages. Whereas when I tell this to like most people that have like some sort of e-commerce brand, they're like, no, that's so scammy. I would never do that. I'm like it works. Like your product, like no one knows what your product is. Like, but you want to put like a 2-word description of it. I'm like, no one's going to buy this. And I'm like, and I always tell people all the time, I'm like, hey, if you were to go to your website and you didn't know who this was, would you buy it? And they'd be like, no, I don't really know what it is. I'm like, yes. So like, why do you think like customers are going to buy it out of nowhere? Right. Cause they think it's just like a Facebook ad. I'm like, no, like your product page needs to be long and descriptive and great images, arrows. Or, like you probably hear all the time, like, oh, I care about my brand. It's my brand. It's clean. I'm like, you're like, first of all, you have no customers. So what is your brand? Like what really is it? Right. And it's like this illusion that they give themselves, because I tell people all the time, it's like, I think that this is like also a psychology with like regular humans. It's like you want to be able to show your friends something and be like, oh, whoa, your brand's so clean, and like get that praise from your friends. Mm-hmm. But really, customers don't really care about that. They want to know, what does the product do for them? But as humans, you're really like kind of like whatever social acceptance, whatever that thing is, like we're used to going to feel like proud of the stuff you're selling. And it's like, so it's a mix of like just ego, I think, sometimes, and then just like making like your friends or family proud of you. So it's like that whole mix. But you know, too, like the best marketers have like the craziest sales page that you're like, whoa, what is this like thing? Like so much content and text and stuff like that. Yeah.
Yeah. And it totally works. And I think that works really well for, especially when it's like a service type product or something where it's like it's not like necessarily something that works when you have like a huge like catalog of SKUs or whatever.
Yeah, no.
But it definitely works if it's like you're selling like let's say you're selling an education product or you're selling something like that, where it's like your company only offers a few things. You can definitely build those out really well. I do think that when you're selling like I have a client that sells like men's underwear, socks, shirts, stuff like that, that we wouldn't use like a page like that.
No.
But we would definitely use like pages that aren't just like always, we're not just always going to send you just to like some pair of underwear, because it's hard to say that that's what someone's going to want. So we'll use a lot more like categorical pages with different content. And we've done some other cool stuff like that too. And you'll see some of the brands like doing some more creative stuff now, where like they're showing you like almost like how to build like a set so that you're getting like, you know, a couple different things. And I think that that kind of stuff works really well too, because then you can have it in your creative of like, hey, build a pack of these, like instead of just selling one-offs. And and that's pretty cool too.
Yeah. And even going back to like when you have a product such as like socks or underwear, which is like essentially like not a commodity, but people know what it is. So it's like an easier sell. I think when you're doing like, you're writing about your, this is more like story-based sort of selling, I would say. Like, let's say you're selling socks, like you can sort of think about why you create this brand besides like socks. And you could be like, hey, my son was, you know, whatever, walking around, and every time he would wear these like Hanes socks, his feet would chafe. And this is why I was now on a journey to discover how do I make softer socks that doesn't make your shoe chafe. And it's like, so now you're not buying the socks, but you're buying to that story about why you created this product. And any product has some sort of origin that you can do to sort of justify the price, because people buy into stories. So think about what that story is for your brand, especially when it's something like a sock or a t-shirt where people know like, people know like this isn't a really expensive product, but people buy it for a certain reason, right? Like you even know, like think about Nike or like Dunks or like Supreme, like the craziest brand that people buy Supreme, like overpriced stuff, but why do they buy it? They buy it for that story, right? And then people are like, look at that. Like, of course, Supreme is a unique because it's like a unique brand, but like, it's really nothing special. And like, I have friends and they're like, yeah, I'm waiting online for Supreme. I'm like, this is so crazy how this brand has such a great story that people like buy in, that they're literally wait online for 12 hours for like a shirt or something.
But it's funny too. And I feel like there's always a brand like that. Like I remember when I was in high school, I think it was Bape. If you remember.
Yeah. Bape. Bape.
Everybody, it was like the same thing. Like people was like, just buy this hoodie. And I'm just like, it's just a zip up hoodie that says Bape on it. Like, there's not like nothing to this, but you spent like $600 on it.
Yeah. And then you're like, you have to get it. It's like that monkey. Like I wanted the Bape monkey. And like, you had like the zip ups with like the full on like skeletons, like you were wearing the craziest stuff. But companies like Bape, Supreme, like Nike, those are like, that's like the exception. And somehow, like, even I've tried to look at the Supreme history, and it's just like, why do they blow up? Like, you just like trying to figure like what exactly do they do? And but there's something in there that you can sort of extract, which is like the story of the brand. Obviously, Supreme is very like urban hip hop, kind of like counterculture, New York City type of thing. So they bake that into like the artists that they work with. So I think with anything, like you can sort of figure out what is that story and how do you say that. And this is like kind of interesting because it's not like, like you probably know, like we're like a lot of direct response marketers where we want like that first sale. But sometimes, depending on the product that you might have, you might need to sort of tell them that story and connect with the brand a different, connect with your customers a different way to make them buy. So especially with like clothing, at least where clothing is very like unique expression versus like, let's say a widget that you like would need for utility, right? Like, or SaaS software where you like, hey, I need this thing to like help me manage my project. Like, you're trying to do an outcome versus like a feel good clothing. Like, cause I just got, I was so funny. Cause I just got like new clothing and I put it on. I was like, oh wow, I feel so good. I'm just like, wow, this is so psychological. Like, I was like, but it's like, I looked at it. And I was like, whoa, this is so crazy how clothes can do that for you. Right. It's like, because it's all just like your mental games with yourself too.
Yeah. But it definitely goes into how you're positioning your creative, what you're saying in your copy. And I think that it's so important. And I think that like, my opinion of people doing paid media is that like, you should never just be someone who like only did Google ads. Like you should get some experience in like display and video and like paid social and whatnot. So, I mean, I do all paid media. So I do like search, social, YouTube, like all of it. And I found that learning each aspect of it has made me so much better at like the core, which I started off doing just like Google search ads. Like that was the first paid media that I did before I expanded out to other ones. But like, it made me better at paid search when I got good at Facebook ads and now like it's a whole different thing. So now like the challenge that I've been going into is like, now I've been getting people to like convert on YouTube, and that's been a whole another challenge, which has been super fun, is like, you know, targeting people on YouTube, getting them to like convert on some of these different videos, whether it's like a B2B company that we're using YouTube to prospect for, or, you know, even B2C e-commerce, we're doing well with YouTube now. And it's the same idea. It's like, you get in front of people that are in a certain point of their cycle. You try to like start telling them the story, solving the problem that they have. And like, it's really cool just watching that work. And then the thing that we're doing now is targeting people that are watching video and retargeting them if they didn't like actually click through and stuff, which I feel like this is a big miss for a lot of people. It's like on Facebook, on YouTube, if you're using video ads, you get this whole other aspect, which is like target people that watched the whole video but didn't click on it or whatever, and then target them with something else. And you can start to like nurture people along, and it really works. You know, it really helps you tell the story and like see what assets work and offer different things.
And I think what you said before is so important. It's like, I think somebody like, I think for most marketers or most people doing like online stuff, I think they should be doing more than just like Facebook. They should be doing Google ads, YouTube ads, display ads, or even like advertorials. Or like back then, I remember when I first started advertising, I was doing like pop-up ads, like on like cell phones, like affiliate marketing. Just like, you just learn different types of marketing that works. And it just sort of like gives you like a better perspective about like all these platforms. And it kind of goes to what we were talking about earlier. It's like, these are just platforms, but marketing is a core skill that you can bring on anywhere. Like before Instagram and Facebook, you were doing Google ads. Right now there's Facebook and Instagram, but now you're still bringing the same marketing concepts of copywriting here. But yeah, I think that's sort of like what I think I always tell people, like that's super helpful. But then again, going back to your story before the video, the retargeting aspect that like watch is like a crazy thing that like when it first came out, I don't think people realize how crazy it is now. Like think about it, like a TV ad, like you can't retarget someone that watched a TV ad, but now with Facebook, you could literally say like, hey, did this person watch it? And then let me get them with another ad. And I think you probably know more than me, like YouTube has like sequential ads, right? Where like you can sort of do like one video, second video, third video. And I read about that and I was like, whoa, this is like so crazy. Like, it's like, you could literally take them through the whole path and like, oh no, video. Yeah.
It's cool too. And like, and then there's, actually, I can't talk about that. Never mind. I was going to say something, but it's a beta and I like can't talk about it. I just realized, but there's some cool stuff coming up that will integrate YouTube better is all I can say about that. And like the attribution is getting way better with like what you can see and how much influence those videos are really having. And I think that's like another thing that's cool with Facebook too, is like you can drill into all the different attribution. You can see, you know, how much people are engaging on a view level versus like clicking through and whatnot. I do hope that at some point Facebook gets a little bit better with showing you like other attribution model touch points. Like the Facebook attribution tool is not very intuitive for a lot of people, but I feel like that is one miss that I hope Facebook gets to. Like with Google now, you can set up your stuff on like first touch attribution, or you can like go in and you can really see the impact across like display and video with some of the newer features that are coming out. But with Facebook, it's like, it's still this last touch thing, which is a little frustrating. However, once you start doing that thing where you show people, you're targeting people that saw the video, it totally works. Like right now I have one, people watch the video and I target anyone who watched like 75% of the video or whatever it is. And I'm targeting them with a carousel of testimonials, customer testimonials. And like, it's amazing how well it's working, because it's like, okay, now they did, I know that they watched sort of like the video that's demoing what the product is and what it is. And then they see customer testimonials of like, this thing increased my business by X, this thing did this. And then they're clicking through and converting on that. But because I know that I'm targeting that audience only with that creative, I can see that like, okay, the video is actually what drove this, you know?
I remember like I forgot what people called it. Like we used to do a lot of this before too. It was like called like carpet bombing or something, like where it's like you have the video view and then you would do like video views, whatever, and then like you would segment it based on like what they watch. But yeah, exactly what you said, it works really well. And I wish Facebook could like show you that, because as you probably know, like similar to you, we have like tons of top of the funnel campaigns and creatives, and then we have middle of the funnel, then we have bottom of the funnel, and like when we'll label it, right? Like MOF, BOF, TOF, but it'd be great if you could see like which ad did they click on Facebook first that made them like do this journey. And if you can see like that, would be nice, because we're kind of like, we just look at the like the cumulative CPA, like, oh, this is pretty good, but which one out of like all these ads that we're running maybe helps further down the funnel convert out a better CPA. That would be kind of interesting, because like I think Facebook has that data, but like how come we don't see that like trail essentially?
Yeah, I know, it's weird. It's like like stuck on last touch. They do have that like the Facebook attribution thing that you can go into and set up, but I feel like it still doesn't give you the right info. Like it still doesn't show you like pads. Like I want something that's like easy to look at. Like when you look at Google Analytics multi-attribute, like the multi-channel funnels, like it's easy to look at a conversion path in there and like chart it out by campaign or by like creative or something. They just don't have anything like that. And so they have something similar, but it's not quite there. So I think that they'll work on it though soon enough. Cause you know, they can't really expect people to like keep scaling without that information.
No. Yeah. You need it. Yeah. That's exactly what it is. I was trying to think of the name, but yeah, the conversion path, which shows you like each touch point, like SEO, PPC, all that stuff. And it's like, oh, it's pretty interesting to see. And sometimes it's like not so actionable, but like you can get, like, you can look at some info and be like, oh, okay, cool. Like I can see that, like, you know, SEO kind of helps a little bit. Yeah. So like,
I work with a pretty big advertiser that's in like the grocery delivery space. And like that one's been interesting too, because, you know, we like rely on that funnel to help us, because a lot of times what will happen is they'll come in on like a product base, like a shopping ad or something, when they learn about the brand.
Okay. Yep.
But then it takes them a minute to like figure out if they're really the type of person that wants groceries delivered. It's almost like a different psychology. It's like they did a search for something, they clicked on the product ad, and they're like, am I someone that orders groceries?
Like, It's like you're like trying to justify yourself. Like, am I this lazy person that's going to do it?
As you can imagine, during the pandemic, it was like then everybody became that person, you know, because everyone was like, well, actually, like I need to do this. So there was like this thing where a lot of people became that. But then I think other people started to, you know, originally it's the selling proposition is different for different use cases. Like I used it when we were having kids, right? So like once like my wife had gave birth and stuff and I'm working, it was like hard to go to the grocery store. Yeah. So we started like ordering groceries, and like, so at different points of different situations, we've been that person. But then there's some people who are just like, I don't like going to grocery stores and this is easier.
That's so, me. That's literally me. That's me. Yeah.
It's like, it's not always the best experience to have to deal with it. So, the funny thing though with that is that like we've relied on like the attribution and like looking back, because sometimes it'll be like 15 days after the click that the person converts and they come back on like an organic or like a brand click or something like that.
Yep.
And so during a time when like they ramped up Facebook in a huge way, they were spending a ton of money on Facebook, and then we had a ton of money on Google ads. That was the best performance we ever had. Yeah. And it was because like people were finding out about us from prospecting on Facebook, from shopping, from some of our YouTube stuff, but they were ending up converting on organic and branded search when they're like, okay, yeah, this is something I want to test out now.
Yeah. And I think like what you're saying is so important to sort of understand that funnel, because you probably, it's great that you guys do like the Facebook and Google ads in like one, like for us, we kind of mostly do a lot of Facebook ads. And if we're pumping a lot of like top of the funnel Facebook creatives, and then work with another Google team, like the Google team's like, oh, look, our campaigns are working. But it's like, well, it's because they found our ads first, and then like your branded campaigns are doing really well, right? So I think knowing that funnel and the process and it's super important for any brand, because you know that as like your top of the funnel increases, they're gonna somehow search for like, you know, whatever, Kevin, Nick, whatever, and they'll look for that person again that they done. But yeah, and I think also too, what you mentioned too was like, that marketing, there's like personas. Like me, I'm a very different than you. Like you had a use case of like your kids. Me, I'm just like, I'm just lazy. I'm like, I don't want to order. So it's like, how do you attract to all these people? Because that's like marketing and copy again. Same targeting, but it's like the copy that changes. But yeah, I think it's so funny because it's like you tell people, like even for me, I have like a cleaner. Like we have a maid. They're like, why do you have a maid from? It's like, I don't know, because I'm lazy. I don't want to clean. oh, it doesn't take too long. I'm like, yeah, but it just takes time. I just don't want to do it, right? It's like,
yeah, I mean, totally. Yeah. Like when it's the same thing. Like I love hiring somebody to deep clean the house, because like I don't want to spend 3 hours doing it. And also they do a better job than me. So it's like, it's like anything else. It's so funny because people will justify paying professionals for certain things, but not others. And it's like, it's like, okay, if I was going to have, I don't know, my bathroom redone, I'm not going to do it myself, because I'm going to do a shit job. Like I'm not going to do a good job tiling a floor. Like, you know, I'm not a tile artisan, but I'll hire someone that will do a way better job. It'll look better. I'm supporting the local economy. It's a good move, you know? And it's so funny how people will like jump to like, well, I wouldn't do this. It's like, but you would do that over there. And it's basically the same idea.
It's same thing. Like for me, that mentality comes from, at least, so before marketing, I used to be like a programmer. So I used to work in like mint.com, and I used to do a lot of iPhone apps. I used to develop apps. And this was like the weirdest like price justification ever. Like an app would be like 99 cents. And you probably know, Nick, like people are like, oh my God, how much is like, oh, was that app free? It's like the number one thing. Is that app free?
Yeah.
You tell them like, no, it's going to be $5.99. They're like, whoa, that's a lot of money. I'm like, this is $5.99 for a developer that's probably worked like hundreds of hours working on an app. And you think $5.99 is a lot. But I'm like, I literally like, I'm drinking this ice matcha. I literally paid $7 without even thinking about it. Right. But like you somehow with an app, you're doing like massive research, like app reviews. Okay, what are people saying on YouTube? Like, is this $5.99 worth it? And you're just like crazy how like people are like that. And I think it's just so funny because I'm just like why? Like, why are certain things like so, like just humans can't let go or like they're so attached to their wallet of that. And I think it's just like that people think that obviously it's probably a lot has to do with it. Like with an app, it's like you can't like feel it or eat it, you know, like those like core things that money you can kind of tangible, right? Essentially. So yeah. But yeah.
Dude, it's so funny that you bring this up. I worked with a company for a while. This was at my last agency. So I had this client that they did like, it's like online, it was a subscription based thing, like basically like yoga subscriptions, yeah, that sort of stuff. And it's cheap. It's like, you know, I think at the time when I was working with them, it was like $10 a month. Yeah. It's like you had unlimited yoga videos and other like fitness videos and all this stuff. And it's like, I have a Peloton, and that's way more expensive per month, even after buying the Peloton.
Yeah.
The subscription is like, I don't know, I think it's like $50 or whatever it is, $40, $50 per month to use like the thing afterwards. And so it's like, I didn't even think about it, but it's probably because I was buying this physical product with it. But this other company, they did 10, it was like $10 a month. Doing a yoga class is more expensive than $10 just to do a drop in.
Yep.
So like, literally doing one yoga class in person per month is more expensive than using this thing that's unlimited at home. Yeah. And it was just out of control how hard it was to get people to convert on this. Like, and then it was funny because then instead of doing like a free trial, they did this thing for a while where it was like $1 for the first month. And people were like, I don't know, man. Like, I don't know about this $1. Like, what am I? Are you sure I should? And it's like, dude, it's $1. It's literally $1. Like, it was amazing how much like reservation there is from like the free trial versus the $1 on something that like they want. Like, someone's literally like, does a search for like online yoga subscription, and then they see that it's going to cost them $1 to try it, and they're like
whoa,
$1. The app thing is the same. I recently signed up for an app like that where I signed up for Calm. It's like a meditation
app
and you have to pay for it. But like for me, I like knew going into it that it was probably going to cost money, and I was like, now I'm at a point where I'm cool with it because I'm like, I don't want to have like my whole app experience interrupted with ads that I'm never going to engage with, you know?
Yeah. That story is so funny because it's like so true. I'm just like, why are other people like this? And it's like, I don't know. And I think it's like funny because I've been thinking about this too. And going back to kind of what you said about the Peloton, I feel like sometimes you need to start off with like a massive purchase, like whatever, I'm not sure, let's say for like example, $1,000. And then you give them like a subscription of like, it's say 20 to 30. That feels better because you're just like, because it's like that price anchoring that you're already like, oh wow, I already paid this upfront fee. Now $20-$30 a month, that's not that much, versus like going cheap to high. I think it's much harder than higher to low. And I think like I've seen a lot of people do this successfully. They'll sell you like a $10,000 like thing. And then like when they release stuff for like $100-$200, you're like, oh, okay, why not? Like it's cheap compared to like that $10,000 thing I just bought from them like a month ago, right? So I think it's like, can you do something like that with like these apps or things, or even going back to like the yoga thing, I was like just thinking about it. Like, what if like you have like some sort of a yoga partnership or something where like they could be like, hey, look, now we have an app for $10 a month. And you're like, oh wow, I just paid $30 for this class. Like, this makes complete sense now. Like, yeah, something like that. Yeah. But
I think like, this, what we're talking about right now, is like part of what makes effective advertising, right? Like what makes effective Facebook advertising, Google advertising, is like being able to think about this kind of stuff. Like what's going to resonate with people? Are they going to convert? And like, you guys probably do the same thing as us with this. Like, we're really careful about vetting out which clients we're even going to work with.
Yeah.
So like we keep a pretty boutique setup. So like we only have a few employees, and we only work with, you know, a small book of clients at any given time. And we're selective about it. Like, we won't close a client that like where, you know, they're in like just a super flooded space and there's not really a differentiator, that sort of thing, or they're not willing to like test out different stuff that we think will work and that sort of stuff. So we're very careful about vetting it out because we have to be able to go through the process and go, okay, this is probably something that we should be able to do. This like recently I talked to one, for example, that they really wanted to push demo requests, but they wouldn't, they wouldn't allow you to do free trials of their product. And I'm like, if it's a software product that's going to cost a lot of money for a business, pushing people to do a demo is really hard to get them to do when their competitors are doing free trials of the actual product. So like, so even before like engaging in advertising, I'm just like, no, like we're not going to win doing request demos like this for this particular scenario. We're not going to win because people will just skip you and try all of your competitor stuff and go with which one they think is best. And they just won't even go with whatever you have. They won't want to do a demo. They don't want to get put into a sales funnel and go through this whole process. They just want to install this, try it out and see what it looks like first. And then you can try to do a demo to then say, okay, you installed, hey, let us like run you through a demo so you can make best use of this. And I'm like, you have to start doing like a better nurturing funnel. And then we start thinking about that. And even though like we don't do the marketing automation piece, we still have to think about it and like how that's going to tie in. But I think that's an important call out. And you probably see this too. Like the best people at managing like these like paid media campaigns are the ones who think like that, who can like get creative about like what converts and like what's going to move the business forward.
Yeah. I think what you said is so important. Like we, like same thing with you. We get a lot of business owners that I'll tell them something. I'll be like, hey, I've seen your stuff like 20 times already. And we've worked with clients that made work. And I'm like, this is what you need to do. And they're like, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm like, you're probably not a good fit because we already are thinking differently. And I've seen your stuff before and I've tried it the way you've sort of said it to me. And like, I know it just doesn't work. But I don't want to engage in this like thing where like, I told you what to do and like you just don't want to make those changes. So like the business owner or whoever is on like the other side needs to like understand that like guys like us, like, hey, like this is the reason why you're gonna come work with us, because like we're like not like we're like we're experts, but like we've seen this space before and we're, and I'm trying to tell people like you probably knew too. I'm like, I'm just trying to do like what I think is gonna make you money, because if you make money, then I make money. So why would I like, people think like I'm here to trick them. I'm like, no, if you're able to spend more money on Facebook ads, Instagram ads, that means you're gonna pay me more. So like, why wouldn't I? That's my best incentive to like make sure I give you a funnel that sort of like converts. And like, similar to you, like we don't do like the email automation part, but like we're thinking about it. We know that that's gonna help our conversions. That's ultimately gonna help us scale. But yeah, I think a lot of times too, it's like, we will get a lot of people that are like, have like this idea. And I'm like, okay, I'm not going to work with you on a random idea. Like, have you proven it? Have you had traction? Have you seen competitors? And a lot of times I'm like, okay, we're going to need like maybe like $5,000 to $10,000 to test the budget. And then they freak out. I'm like, okay, you're just like not emotionally ready to like test. Yeah. So like, we're probably not going to be a good fit. And like, you probably see that too. Like you run $20 and they're like texting your email and you're like, oh my God, how come we're not getting conversion? I'm like, it's like $20. Like relax. Like,
yeah, totally. I mean, that's why like, we're really careful with like, you know, our vetting process of who we're going to work with. And it, and that way, like we end up having like really good partnerships, you know, because then it's like, okay, we're not going to go down the path of like, you know, like, we're not going to go down a path where it's like every campaign is treated with like last touch attribution only. And like all this other stuff, like we have to be nimble and like understand the way that the funnel works. And I mean, like same thing goes with, you know, if you want to go up funnel, like we do Pinterest ads and Pinterest ads, we only do for very specific verticals. Cause it's really like a kind of a niche market. But like, one of the things that we found there is that like when we run Pinterest ads for like B2C e-commerce brands, if you are looking at it with like a, only like a 1 day view and like whatever, 30 day click or something like that, like typical, like similar to Facebook or Google, it's never going to work that way. Yeah. But as soon as you increase the view through window a little further and like understand that like people on Pinterest are a lot of times not ready to purchase yet, but they're like exploring things, you start to get way better results. So like recently we did a thing where we increased our view through window to like 14 day just to like do an analysis. Mm-hmm. And like the ROAS immediately was like so much higher. And it's because people were discovering us there, but not converting there.
Yep.
And it's like, we knew it was a valuable thing because of what people were actually buying. And it was the products that we were basically promoting there. So people were coming back and buying them on other channels. We knew that we had heavily invested there, and we knew like what kind of audiences we were targeting. So we could at least tie back to the value that it added. But I think that's an important thing too. It's just like, you know, people are at different places in the buying cycle there. And at some point you're going to have to do some demand generation. Mm-hmm. And that's where like Pinterest comes in, or like prospecting with video and stuff like that.
Yeah. And I think what you said is so important too, because everybody, I mean, you probably know, everybody wants to be on Facebook and Google forever and be like, I want that direct like ROI. But there's a reason why all like big brands somehow eventually do billboard ads, because there's needs to be demand generation. You can only prospect so much on these platforms. And I tell people like people always say like, oh, I can't believe there's billboard ads. I'm like, because they've probably done prospecting all they can on Facebook and Instagram. And like, you probably haven't reached that point yet, but every business needs to go out of these platforms, billboards, TV ads, radio ads, all that stuff. It's like, because it's kind of what you just said, it's like you eventually need to do demand generation so that your other channels work even better. Because if not, your Facebook will never pull out the numbers that you're looking for.
Yeah, totally. I mean, there's a reason like podcast advertising is getting so big now. And like, you know, in most of the companies that I work with, either they or one of their competitors is doing podcast advertising. And that's just the reality of it. Like there's several underwear and sock brands even doing that, you know? Yep. And it's like, I mean, obviously like that's really broad. You're just targeting people who listen to a podcast. Like you have no idea. Like, you know, I understand some of it. Like sometimes on like a marketing, you know, it's like a marketing podcast and it's like some tool that's like a marketing reporting tool or something. That's pretty like low, low funnel, but like, yeah, I mean, there's a reason that consumer brands will just target like a high trafficked podcast. Yeah. They'd be like, oh, you know, this underwear brand is going to be on the Bill, like the Bill Burr podcast or something.
And
Joe Rogan or
Joe Rogan. Yeah. Joe Rogan, like millions of like advertising. Cause like, exactly. It's a completely brand advertising. Like who is a Joe Rogan listener? It's like everybody or kind of, or like,
just it's just like getting in front of people and like, that's their medium. Cause they're not listening to regular radio. And I think like it's important. I think it's so important for even like your company focuses mostly on Facebook ads, but you guys know about all the other ecosystems because you know the impact that it's going to have.
Yeah. And I think for us, as agency owners or marketers, essentially, it's important to know, like, at least advise our clients that, like, hey, look, like maybe Facebook isn't the right platform for your product. Like, I had someone recently that had like a tool, and I was like, hey, I don't really think like Facebook would work well for you. I think you should try this other channel. And like, we can't help because we don't do that channel, but like, go try to explore that yourself, because I think it's so important for us to even just like give advice that makes sense, even when, kind of what you said before, it's like, we don't want to work with any client either. Like, we just know that, like, I'm like, hey, from what I've seen, like, this doesn't make sense. But yeah, I think it's so important to know and to work with people that truly understand that stuff, at least like in general, at least for me, you probably too. Like, I just like reading about it. I'm like, oh, what are these brands doing? And that excites me, because I'm like, oh, whoa, it's so crazy. Like, that's so wild. Like, you probably see it now, like TikTok is a big thing that like, I'm seeing people get a lot of sales. And I'm just like, oh, that's interesting. I'm like, wonder what they're doing. Like, how do you sort of use that? Cause it's such a different medium compared to like Facebook or Instagram. And it's like more dancing type of stuff, you know, obviously it's I haven't like done too much of it, but like, I'm keep hearing stuff. So I'm like, there's something there that's making people get sales. And I was reading online on LinkedIn, someone posted that, like, it was a beauty brand. They posted like a tutorial and it blew up, and the founder was like, yeah, we got like 40% more increase in sales. But like, they said, like, it wasn't like they couldn't attribute it to Facebook, through like TikTok, but during that week, like that TikTok video blew up. So there's like a lot of branding happening there too.
Yeah, totally. It's actually cool. I'm running an ad campaign on TikTok right now for somebody. And like, the reason is because their product and like what they offer appeals to like young people. Yep. So like, usually Instagram has been one of their best channels, but with the growth of TikTok, it became kind of an interesting play. And they have conversion tracking. It's set up a lot like Facebook Business Manager. Like the platform looks a lot like Facebook Ads Manager and Business Manager. So we set up the conversion tracking and we're definitely getting some leads from it, which is pretty cool. Cause it was like, originally it was just an experiment, but now it's actually turning into something for them. And, you know, one thing that's funny about TikTok is if you go on there and look at like the people that have a lot of followers, there's a lot of the entertainment stuff and comedians and funny videos, but there's also a lot of people on there that are doing like, it's almost like the video version of like what we were talking about earlier with like capital letters and power words and that, like, you'll have these guys on here that are like, if you want to make $5,000 per week doing this simple thing. Blah, and then it's like this, like, you know, hook that gets people in, and they're like selling like some system or whatever it is. And like, that's actually pretty big there. And it's like a lot of like young people like using that platform for it. Yep. So it's interesting, 'cause it's similar to a typical ad that you would see on like, you know, someone that's like, do these five things now and blah, blah, blah. You know, it's that typical sales thing, but people are doing it with like organic video on TikTok. And I'm seeing a lot of that now.
Yeah. And I think like, if you think about the audience there on TikTok too, it could be like younger people that kind of like maybe like biz ops opportunities would work well, because we were like in that stage of like, kind of want to make money, or like, I'm kind of like a rebel, like with your parents. So like, you have to think about like going back to like marketing or copywriting. It's like, what's that mindset of that person, that platform? It's like, as a teenager, you know, like when I was a teenager, we all were teenagers. We were thinking a lot differently. Like now I'm just like, hey mom, what's up? Let's talk. Before I'm like, mom, like, we're not talking to you right now. Like, it's like, you have to think about what's that mindset that you're in. And you can sort of like appeal to that, saying like, hey, you don't make money, or like maybe leave your house, I don't know, whatever that is. Right. Stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny, because like with TikTok, like I post some of my podcast clips there. Like, I'm probably like the worst TikToker, because I'm not really making like entertaining videos, but I just put like some of my clips there so that people could like find the podcast or whatever. Yeah. But it's wild, because people will tag entrepreneurship, and it's like, this is not entrepreneurship. Like, it's a lot of this stuff is like get rich quick schemes. And I'm like, I really hope that like people start to realize like that that's happening there. It's like the same type of stuff that used to always be all over Facebook ads in the early days, you know, and like a lot of the stuff that they don't even really allow anymore. It's like, there's like some kind of organic growth on TikTok around that. And I just like, I hope people start to get like pretty quickly, like dismiss some of it. Because there's like, I've gone on there and I've seen like the same video, like 8 times from different people promoting the same tactic of how to like make money off YouTube. And I'm like, who are you? Like, I don't think that this tactic is going to work if like there's 8 different people promoting it and like everybody's going to flood that, you know?
Yeah. It's like the early days when like a Facebook, when like there's no rules and they're just allowing marketers to come in and like flood the app, the ecosystem with like any random ad. And like anything, it's like, eventually, like you said, it's like people will be like annoyed by it, be like, hey, this is a scam. And then like TikTok will have to do something about it. But I think like anything, these platforms allow that, so they can just like get people to be like, oh, look how great it's working, because they know that other marketers will tell other marketers, hey, you need to try this platform because I'm making so much money. And then that leads to like the growth. And even like, you probably know now too, with Facebook, like, everybody's like, oh, Facebook, gotta try Facebook, it's like making so much money. But I'm like, Facebook now is very different than Facebook 2-3 years ago. Like, you really have to like think of a good marketing strategy on Facebook in order to make money. Besides then, it's like just a random ad. And I kind of what we were saying before, it's like you need to think about the copy, the creatives, the videos, because now it's like you actually have to do like marketing versus like, let me just throw something out there and, you know, like there's no competition essentially.
And also, like, I think what people forget about Facebook is that you could be competing against all different types of brands for the same person for different reasons.
Yep.
So it's very difficult in that regard. Like right now, we have all the election stuff that's driving up CPMs for everybody. So it's like, you're competing against the Biden and Trump campaigns for the same person, even though like they're trying to target them for a much different reason than you. It's not like Google search where that you wouldn't be competing with them because they're targeting different keywords if they're doing that, you know? So with Facebook, it's tough in that regard. And like, as you go into Q4, like the latter half, and you get into holiday season, you know, the CPMs go up for all the e-com advertisers that are advertising. So like my B2B SaaS companies, we always have to like be really cautious as we go into like Q4. 'Cause it's like, all right, we're going to be dealing with like, you know, Macy's and Nordstrom, and all these companies are going to spend like millions of dollars during this very short window. And CPMs are going to be high for everybody. So we have to be careful.
Yeah. And that's so true too. Like even for us, like we work with like a lot of e-commerce companies, and just for Q4, we know like we're just seeing the conversion rates just like be really, really low. And then we'll see such a big uptake on like that Black Friday week of just like super high ROAS and everything from there. So that's the way we kind of think about it too. And, but yeah, even for us, like a big, big thing for us is we're preparing for this sort of like movement of sales. And even for now, we're just kind of like trying to like ride like the CPMs to be like, okay, like let's try to break even, because we know that we're going to have like a great amount of sales. And I think too, consumers know this as well, where they're not buying because they know like in a week or two, there's going to get massive sales. There's no point of buying. It's like, And plus, like, no one's like in an urgent mode right now. It's like you're all kind of like working from home, so it's not like you need new stuff. So it's like, let me just wait, right? So it's like kind of everything is working against like any e-commerce buyer at the moment. So
yeah, totally. I think that this holiday season might be like one of the biggest like e-com like buys that has happened because of like the pandemic and everything. I think that it's going to be a huge like season for Facebook ads and like for all these e-com brands. I think they're going to spend a lot more than they have in the past, which will be a really interesting thing to see kind of how it goes and like what the reporting looks like. I'm sure that like, you know, eMarketer or something will have some pretty cool reports after Q4 ends.
Yeah, I think the person that's going to win out of all this is going to be like Facebook. They're just going to make so much money from like every advertiser pumping their system. And
totally. Yeah. Facebook, like, Google Shopping is going to be huge this season too.
It's like these big brands. Like Facebook, I don't know. I always think about Facebook. I'm like, Facebook knows like people are going to pump more money. I'm like, are they CPMs like artificially increased because they know people are always going to like come in, you know, like that.
I mean, I've been seeing some really high ones lately, like higher than I've ever seen on some cases for like audiences that haven't even changed. And I'm just like, man, I mean, I did have one person send me like a list of like the campaign spending on a curve with their CPM. Yeah. And it was following the exact same thing. Like as the campaign spending went up for the different political campaigns, CPMs went up right with it. So I definitely see that. But then, you still wonder, it's like, where's the bottom line on the auction?
You know? It's like, and that's the thing too. It's like the auction always goes up and I'm like, I'm never seeing it come down from like the new limit. And I'm like, and like this limit is like just something that Facebook can say it is, right? It's like interesting. Like, and the reason why I say it, for me, I'm like thinking about it. I'm like, Facebook makes billions of dollars in profit. I'm like, you can lower your CPM because and make a little bit less profit. So like this number is like some sort of artificial number that you're making up. Similarly with Google too, right? Like Google makes billions in profit. I'm like, you're like a keyword of like shouldn't cost like $20 a click. I'm like, you can make that $15 a click, right? So it's like, it's like these numbers come from somewhere. It's not like this. They always say it's like an auction algorithm, but like that auction is programmed. So
And with Google, it used to be this whole thing of like, you only pay one penny more than the previous person, all this stuff. But like, sometimes I'm seeing cases where I'm like, why is my client's brand term $2 when there's nobody even bidding on it? And I'm like, and then it's like, you know, it's just like this weird thing. And it's like, okay, maybe sometimes there's like competitors driving it up because they're bidding like crazy and they're putting $20 CPCs on like company client's brand term or something. But if there's no other people there, or maybe there's only like one other advertiser, it doesn't make sense.
Yeah. And so, I think stuff like that, it's like interesting because I've seen that too. I'm just like, for some brands, I'm like, there's no like other competitors, especially on a brand new brand. Why is it costing like $1? Like this is a brand new company. It should be like in theory 1 cent. Right. So, it's just like very interesting how they're doing it. And I don't know. I always think about it. I'm like, wow, like, they're just making so much money. Like it's like, that's what I'm thinking. I'm like, wow, they're making so much money. And I don't even know like people think about it, but like Google literally like prints money from like Google ads. It's
totally do. And I mean, and that's why like now you have to be doing online advertising. It's grown so much since I started in the space. I think when I started in the space, people only spent like 10% or less of their budget online or something like that. And it's like every year it's gone up and up and up. And it's, but as a result, it is more competitive. It is more sophisticated. Some of the tools have gotten better. I mean, I remember managing Facebook ads like 6 years ago and it was terrible, like working in there versus what it is now. And so the tools are definitely getting better, but the auction is getting like more intense. So it's like, you really have to be creative with like how your messaging is and all that.
Yeah. And even then I think too, like at a certain point, like I'm like, this is so expensive. Like, and products are not going to cost this much. So like, how can it be sustainable for even advertisers to be in a platform? Like, and that's what I'm thinking too. Like, it's kind of like inflation in a way, right? I'm like, hey, like this is getting like your widget's $30, but your keyword is like $40. I'm like, you can never make this work. Right. So how I'm thinking about stuff like that too. I'm like, is it like Americans aren't making more money? Like how do you justify the price now? Because you're, even to advertise, it'd be crazy. Like, it's like those are things I think about, like maybe not now, but like in the future, I'm just like, it's so wild, right? Like, I don't know. So something to think about.
Totally. Well, anyway, I think we should probably end here. So how can people get in touch with you? I'll edit in the show notes as well.
Yeah, just Kevin at Voy Media or just voymedia.com. Just contact me there. That's probably the best spot. Also, I'm on Twitter. So if you can find me on Twitter, twitter.com/Danest, D-A-N-E-S-T. So
perfect. Awesome. Well, I really appreciated having you on. It's been a great conversation.
Thanks, Nick. Thanks for having me.
All right. Take care.